So welcome to the afternoon session. It is really bright up here, isn't it? Now I know why Ian was doing this the whole time. We're going to do two-minute fire slides. This is not going to be the whole hour, which is great, because then that leaves me a little bit of time to explain at the end of this session what we're going to do next for our fun panel discussion and the pre-panel brainstorming session. So those of you who gave me a slide, it's going to appear in a random order. So once your slide comes up, you know it's your turn to come up here. Don't bother putting the lapel mic on, because that's going to take forever. And I will just basically tell you when you are done after 2 minutes. Cool. Okay. Well, to kick it off, we have Jiayu Yang, who's from Waterloo.
Yeah, that's right.
Just hold on to it.
Oh, okay, thank you. Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm Jiayu Yang. I'm working with Professor Rob Mann and Nia Shafshorty. Today, I'll talk about the entropy of analog black hole. Basically, what we're trying to do is to find the analog system of black hole. And here, we consider a 2+1 dimensional condensed matter system called...
This works now. Sorry.
Yeah. Called graphene. And this is a band structure of graphene. And there are six vertices here. They are called dark cones. And if we introduce a tilt parameter zeta, we can tilt the dark cone. And this is the Hamiltonian of the tilted dark cone materials. And this Hamiltonian can be derived from this emergent space time metric. And we can also get the dispersion relation of the tilted dark cone. And we can plot the tilted dark cone like this. This is the upright dark cone.
Sorry, no one can hear you since
moved.
Choose one.
This is the upright dark cone, and this is when we introduce the tilt parameter, and this is the tilted dark cone. And if we assume that the tilt parameter is linearly dependent of the space coordinate, we can compute the entropy of the tilted dark cone. And this entropy is proportional to the maximal momentum cutoff, Pm, and inversely proportional to the kappa times beta, where kappa is the surface gravity, and the beta is the immense temperature. And if we assume that the maximum momentum cutoff is proportional to 1 over g, the Lewton constant, and the kappa plays the role of temperature, we can find that the entropy of the tilted dark cone material has the same form as the black hole entropy. So this tells us the graphene could presumably be an analog system of the black hole. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much. So next up, we have Rob Mann.
I'm told I usually don't need one of these, but yeah, okay. So this is a project I've done with Jamila Arabachi, former master student Josh Fu, now postdoc in the U.S., Magdalena Zeich, who's now in Sweden, on quantum superposing black holes. And there is a lot of formalism behind this, but the basic idea is that a quantum theory of gravity, whatever it is, should give us some notion of the superposition of a space-time, and in particular, the superposition of black hole space-times. And so rather than a top-down approach asking what kind of formalism or description would give us this, we basically have a way of modeling it, and we're asking, what would you see with some kind of detector if such a thing could exist? And in particular, we have this superposition of two black holes of mass MA and MB, signified by this picture here. And we have a detector in its ground state and a scalar field in its ground state. And we've developed a formalism where you can show that each unitarily evolves via this kind of Hamiltonian. And you can then look at the response of the detector conditioned on these two different possible orthogonal superpositions of the masses after tracing out the scalar field phi, and the result you get for the reduced density matrix of the detector is this combination of the ground part and the excited part with these coefficients PG in green and PE in red, just to color code it so you can see. And then, just as with any other quantum system, you can then plot these quantities here, which is what we have done for the excited part on this slide. And what we find, as described in more detail in this paper right here, is that we get resonant peaks at integer values of the square roots of the mass ratios, or more properly, at integer values of the ratios of the horizon sizes, because the horizon goes like the square root of the mass for a 2 plus 1 black hole. This is consistent with Bekenstein's black hole mass quantization conjecture. So the distinctions in these pictures is the blue one is conditioned on the plus state, the orange on the minus, and here the blue one on the plus state except for a phase, and the orange on the minus except for a phase. We have since been able to obtain results that we're now writing up for rotating black holes, and we do find something analogous to this in the case of rotating black holes, though the details are a bit more complicated. It may be a bit of a high hope, but since the theme of this conference is to simulate quantum gravitational effects, it would certainly be nice if this is one of those effects that could indeed be simulated somehow. I'm not quite sure how. You'd have to get some medium that would allow for a perhaps superposition of two different vortices that mimicked a black hole or some such thing, but I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Okay, next up we have Duncan O'Dell.
Hello, I'm Duncan O'Dell, and I love singularities. Sounds like the beginning of an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Okay, so this is joint work with my PhD student, Liam, who's in the audience. We'll be giving a short talk on one of the next days. And Chris Howells, who's a mathematician at the University of Southampton. Okay, so I've seen lots of great singularities this meeting, including, I think, these false vacuums. Anyway, my particular singularity of choice today is an event horizon. And if you have a wave propagating away from a black hole, you know it gets red shifted. If it's going the other way, if it's going into the black hole, it gets blue shifted. And in fact, as it approaches the horizon, its wavelength actually gets so small it tends to zero. And you get a logarithmic singularity. So in fact, the phase of the wave has no meaning at that point, and we might wonder how to regulate that. So that's obviously a very hand-wavy sort of argument, but if you do a more proper calculation in a flowing Bose-Einstein condensate, where it flows through, where it has a point in the flow where it exceeds the speed of sound, then you get this wave function here, which Chris, our collaborator, has dubbed a logged airy function. Okay, so this is actually smooth, and the reason it doesn't have a singularity, although it does have a logarithm inside the exponential there, and the reason is due to dispersion. So in a Bose-Einstein condensate, you have a Bogdanov dispersion relation, which effectively has a cutoff. It has a linear portion for very long wavelengths, and then it bends upwards, and those are due to quantum effects, interestingly, so it's regulated by quantum effects. So would that have any meaning for an astrophysical black hole? So let me now take you to the middle part of this slide. So here's a remarkable thing. Okay, it's so remarkable it makes me emotional sometimes. So it turns out singularities in nature only take certain shapes, or more precisely, structurally stable singularities. So those are singularities that are stable against perturbations, and those are the ones you see generically in nature. They're classified by catastrophe theory. So for instance, in one dimension, you can have a fold. In two dimensions, you can have folds that meet at cusps. and so on. In three dimensions, you get these more exotic things, and there's a whole hierarchy of them. And anyway, I can't go on too much about them, although I'd love to. So for example, if you have a cusp here, so zoom into the cusp, what's plotted, these little insets, are the action. And you'll see that there's different numbers of stationary points. Generally speaking, to describe a cusp, you need a quartic action. The stationary points are the classical solutions. Inside the cusp, you have at most three solutions. As you cross this fold line here, two of them annihilate. And you only have one outside. At the cusp point, all three annihilate at once. So it turns out that all these, so this is the classical theory of these singularities, but each of them, if you go to the wave theory, is dressed by a universal wave function. And in the case of the fold, it's the Airy function, which you may have heard of. In the case of the cusp, it's the Peercy function, which most people have not heard of. There's, for instance, there's two control parameters here, C1 and C2. Now, what do we have with our logged Airy function? So the philosophy is, perhaps, because these structures are universal, that if we can map, we regulate this problem in a BEC, but perhaps it has some greater significance. If this singularity is universal, no matter what the regulation is of the astrophysical black hole, maybe Planck scale physics, perhaps there's still some relevance if we get a universal function here. So what we get with this logged Airy, puzzlingly, is halfway between an Airy function and a Peercy function. So classically, if you solve the classical theory of this, you actually get something that looks like the Peercy function. So you see that it's got these Airy terms here, k cubed and linear in k, just like the Airy function here, where I've just written, should have written k here rather than s. But in fact, it's got this extra log, and our working hypothesis at the moment that what's going on, what's new in this event horizon singularity, this logged Airy, is pair creation. And it's pair creation that gives rise to this log. It's also due to conformal symmetry and so on. So I'll leave it there, but that's the puzzle we're working on at the moment. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Duncan. Let's see who's next. Okay, next we have Victor Wei. Oh, sorry, I closed it. Where'd it go? That's mine. I'm blind. Thank you. Oh, don't crash, don't crash, don't crash, don't crash. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a bit too much, but I'll try to finish in 2 minutes. Yeah, so hi, I'm Victor. I'm a summer student in Professor Chris Mushik's group. Today I'll be presenting, it's hidden here, but Nearer Shadow Composite Tomography. It's basically a new protocol for benchmarking experimentally prepared quantum states. So as compared to the state-of-the-art neural network quantum system tomography, our new protocol, in SQSD, uses an infidelity loss function that was estimated using the classical shadows of the quantum state. By leveraging that, for the Clifford version, you only need a constant number of measurements to predict the infidelity with bounded errors. And we benchmarked our new protocol on the time-involved state under the SU3 charterized time evolution, where my supervisor presented earlier this Monday. And as you can see, the third column, very bottom, for any QST, which didn't use the shadow estimated loss function, and you have to pick a subset of the Pauli basis to measure, although the loss function has converged, the infidelity did not converge at all. It stays around 1, whereas our new protocol in SQST has the infidelity converging very fast to pretty much 0. And we also used our reconstructed quantum state to predict the physically meaningful observables, the kinetic energy here. and here. And as you can see, the ANQS deconstructed quantum state predicts the kinetic energy to be negative and very far from the exact value, whereas our new protocol's shadow estimate loss function predicts the kinetic energy with very good accuracy. Thanks. By the way, the preprints are out in the different references.
Okay, thanks, Victor. And by the way, these are being recorded, so if you're interested in looking in more detail at all the interesting stuff on some of these slides, you could just check back later today, and the PDFs of the talks will be up there. So, way to learn more, but you can also just find Victor. Okay, next up, Jonathan Braden. It's your fault for sitting at the top. It's the price you pay.
Okay. All right, so this is just like an introductory slide about who I am more than anything. So I'm Jonathan. And basically, if I think about my scientific life, I'm really interested in questions of quantum field theory when it's really, really non-equilibrium, really, really non-linear, really, really non-perturbative, and coupled to gravity in strange, sometimes very strong ways. So, you know, a variety of things that I work on are relativistic phase transitions, specifically starting from like vacuum states and thermal states, and also dynamics of features and nonlinearity both during inflation and right at the end of inflation, which are both epochs where you can get very, very strong nonlinear interactions from the vacuum fluctuations. And a very cool thing that you can get is sort of highly non-Gaussian perturbations to the density field in very early universe that are not very well represented by three-point functions and four-point functions and five-point functions and six-point functions. And so as a result, all the things we've used on data so far are basically insensitive to these types of things, but they come from very well-motivated theoretical models. And so as it relates to this conference, of course, you know, I said a bunch of scary words about quantum field theory where we don't know how to compute anything, really, so we have to run big nonlinear simulations that involve approximations. But it'd be very nice to have an actual quantum field theory that does nonlinear stuff and undergoes first-order phase transitions or replicates end of inflation or replicates nonlinearities during inflation. And so the other thing I work on is doing these analog experiments for the early universe. Okay, that's it. And so I'll be talking about this in the discussion session this afternoon. So, who's up next?
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. Okay, next up we have Anna.
Okay, so hello everyone. I'm Anna, and I interpreted the slide slightly differently than some people here. But I'll fill in the details. So I am a master's student here at PI. I actually just have my defense on Friday during the lunch break, if you want to stop by. I came from Zurich, and I've been here for 2 years now at the PICL, as we call ourselves, the Perimeter Institute Quantum Intelligence Lab. And what I've been doing mostly for the past year is in collaboration with Quera. That's a startup in Boston, and they work with neutral atom quantum processors. I've been working more on the classical simulation side, doing quantum Monte Carlo studies, and I've kind of been going back and forth between the experimental data and these classical simulations, looking at phase transitions. It's 2 plus 1D Ising class phase transition. And yeah, maybe just a comment, what I found really interesting about this conference, looking at these universality classes, I've just been curious to hear people's thoughts about how that might extend beyond criticality in the future, because we keep on drawing these analogies and saying things behave in the same way, right? We're mapping systems to other systems governed by the same dynamics. Is that another form of universality in some sense? So that's been a thought I've had. And apart from quantum stuff, I'm also very interested in climate, so I'm going to go work for the Speed to Zero initiative at my home university for a year next year. And then I'll come back to Boston. Cool.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you, Anna. I think it's just me, but my slide keeps like crashing my computer. Conveniently. Okay, so under the assumption that it's actually not going to work, I don't know why double-clicking wouldn't make it come to the front. It just somehow mine does not work. Okay. Okay, tech support.
How big are those three words?
Really big. Oh, thank you. Thanks, Arani. Okay, I'm Matt Johnson. I am a faculty member here, but also at York University in Toronto. And I've been focused on three main themes in my research over the past few years. One of them is thinking about new ways that we can map the universe on extremely large horizon scales by looking at the properties of microwave background photons when they bounce off of electrons on their way to us. And this encodes new and interesting non-Gaussian patterns in the microwave background that you can use to reconstruct a map of the universe on the largest possible scales with the highest fidelity that we will be able to observe in the near future. I'm also interested in the field of fundamental strong gravity. So how can we use numerical simulations of the Einstein equations, either in the early universe or in binary systems, in order to learn more about fundamental physics, like new particles, new forces, other universes, and so on and so forth. And typically, the crazier the physics, the more interesting. Finally, relevant to this conference, I have been interested for 25 years in the process of vacuum decay. My first paper ever as a PhD student was on vacuum decay. And then I keep writing papers about it and never quite being able to escape it and accreting more people to make them interested in it somehow. And so the recent incarnation of accreting people that are interested in this problem is trying to convince people that do experiments to do the thing in the lab. And so I'm really interested in that as well. And yeah, thank you very much. Okay, before I go on, I did want to invite anyone who doesn't have a slide who would like to just introduce themselves, say one word about what they're working on. You don't have to be shy, and then everyone know who you are. Any takers? No, everyone's too shy. Okay.
Which I think is,
just hold on to it.
Thanks. So I'm on the organizing committee, which I think is a generous interpretation of organization. And I work on whatever I'm interested in, but a lot of it has to do with black holes. So Silke is determined to get me to do some data analysis. So that'll be interesting. As you saw, I'm interested in vortices, the vortices that Sam was talking about this morning. Those also have analogies with cosmic strings. And I guess I'm kind of interested in, if you like, false positive signals potentially with black holes, where you think you've got a signal of something that's not GR, whereas in fact it's just some near horizon phenomena. So those are some of the things I'm thinking about at the moment, as well as actually, yes, I do false vacuum decay as well, but with black holes. Now,
thank you, Ruth. Okay. In the back.
Hi, Hi, I'm Katie Mack. I'm based here at Perimeter, and I work on dark matter and early galaxies mostly, but I am also really fascinated by vacuum decay and I've dabbled in it a little bit, so I'm mostly here to listen about new research into that phenomenon.
Hey, thank you. Okay, any other takers? Okay, going once, going twice. Okay, well then, thank you very much. This concludes the fire slides.